Glad to be here today, a special day. Nice to see all the mothers and the ladies here today. Let me ask you a question. How many of you today thought that my exhortation would be about mothers or women along that topic? That surprises me. When Denise heard my topic for today, she made a comment. She says, "How predictable." I thought, predictable, yeah, but appropriate. Today's Mother's Day. Some call it a Hallmark holiday. But it gives us a chance to stop for a moment, say thank you, and thank you for our wives, our mothers, the ladies in our lives. In my case, it's a chance for me to say, hey, thanks. Thanks for hanging in there with me. If you look around this room today, I think, anyway, our women are the best. We're truly a blessed group here of men. Does anybody know the history of Mother's Day? I didn't. I didn't know how we got to this point today, so I took the opportunity to look it up. So just bear with me for a minute and I'll give you what I found out. Contrary to popular belief, Mother's Day was not conceived or fine-tuned in the boardroom of Hallmark. The earliest tributes to mothers go back to the annual spring festival of the Greeks, dedicated to Rhea, the mother of many deities, and to the offerings ancient Romans made to their god, great mother of gods, Cybele. Christians celebrated this festival on the fourth Sunday in Lent in honor of Mother Mary, Mother of Christ. In England, this holiday was expanded to include mothers and was called Mothering Sunday. In the United States, Mother's Day started about 150 years ago, when Anna Jarvis, an Appalachian homemaker, organized a day to raise awareness of poor health conditions in her community, a cause she believed would be best advocated by mothers. She called this Mother's Work Day, which wouldn't fit today, I don't think. We had a Mother's Work Day. 15 years later, Julia Ward, a Boston poet, a pacifist, and actually the author of the lyrics to the Battle Hymn of the Republic, organized a day encouraging mothers to rally for peace. And she believed they bore the loss of human life more than anybody else. The mothers did. The loss of life in war. In 1905, when Anna Jarvis died, her daughter, also named Anna, began a campaign to memorialize the life work of her mother. Legend has it that young Anna remembered a Sunday school lesson that her mother gave, in which she said, "I hope and pray someone, sometime, will found a Memorial Mother's Day. There's many days for men, but none for mothers." Anna began to lobby prominent businessmen like John Wanamaker, which I have no idea who he is, but it was in the history, and politicians including President Taft and Roosevelt to support the campaign and create a special day to honor mothers. At one of the first services organized to celebrate Anna's mother in 1908 at her church in West Virginia, Anna handed out her mother's favorite flower, the white carnation. 5 years later, the House of Representatives adopted a resolution officially calling for the government to wear white carnations on Mother's Day in 1914. Oddly enough, I won't give any more of that, but it turns around that Anna actually felt a little bit jilted before she died because of the Hallmark end of this thing. It said that in 1923 she filed a lawsuit to stop Mother's Day festival and was even arrested for disturbing the peace at a convention selling carnations for a war mother's group. Before her death in 1948, Jarvis said to have confessed she regretted ever starting the Mother's Day tradition. I started thinking about it in preparation for this exhortation. We look to our Bible for wisdom, for strength, and inspiration. Most of the time, we look to the men in the Bible. At least I do. We do our Wednesday night classes, Sunday school classes. They're typically on Daniel, Paul, or David. Typically all men, all great men, great inspirations, lessons, and teachers for us. With today being Mother's Day, I thought, what about the women in the Bible? Where do you look for inspiration if you're a woman in our ecclesia? Women played a huge part all throughout the Bible, as well as a huge part in this ecclesia today. Today I want to take a look at some examples of some women in the Bible, and look at some of their stories and draw some lessons from them. One of the ones that come to mind, prominent women, let's start with Elizabeth. So why don't you turn me to Luke chapter 1. Elizabeth is Elisheba. It means God's promise. Or in some versions, God is bountiful and generous. We pick that up in Luke 1, verse 5. There was in the days of Herod, the king of Judea, a certain priest named Zacharias, of the course of Abia. And his wife was of the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. And they were both righteous before God, walking all the commandments and ordinances of the Lord, blameless. Verse 7, and they had no child, because Elizabeth was barren, and they both were now stricken in years. Most of the people remember Elizabeth as the barren cousin of Mary. I didn't really want to get on Mary today. I'm sure the people across the street are doing Mary today, and the guy in the corner is doing Mary today, and over there at Cornerstone, they're probably doing four services with Mary today. So that's going to be my mention for Mary today. We know how great Mary was in the purpose in our life that she filled. In Luke, verses 5 through 7 gives us a great deal more information about Elizabeth. Like her husband, she was righteous before God and lived blamelessly according to the commandments and regulations of the Lord. In other words, Elizabeth was a godly woman. Being called righteous before God was a high praise indeed, as her righteousness would have been a reflection of her faith. Yet Elizabeth was barren. Like Sarah and Hannah, Elizabeth was a godly woman who could not have children. Luke made a point to outline Elizabeth's family background. She was descended from a long line of priests. Luke established this fact right in the beginning of his gospel. Luke wanted to say very loud and clear that John came from a respectable, well-connected family. So he began pointing out that not just one, but both John's parents came from a priestly family. And Elizabeth's father was a priest. That's what went by the daughters of Aaron. Her husband Zechariah was a member of the priestly order. Abijah? No good. Despite her impeccable family background, Elizabeth was barren. Normally, childless was not a misfortune, it was a disgrace. We see this in the case of Sarah in Genesis. Let's turn to Genesis 16 quickly. We can look at Sarah's account there. If you look at childlessness, in Genesis 16, we pick it up in verse 4, and he, Abram, went unto Hagar, and she conceived. And when she, Sarah, saw that Hagar had conceived, her mistress was despised in her eyes. We also see the very similar circumstance with Hannah. In 1 Samuel 1, verse 5 and verse 6, and I'll just read it for you. You don't have to go there. 1 Samuel 1, and the time was that Elkanah offered, he gave to Peninnah, his wife, and to all her sons and daughters portions. But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah. But the Lord had shut up her womb, and her adversary also provoked her sore, for to make her fret, because the Lord had shut up her womb. In Elizabeth's case, since her reputation showed she was blameless, instead there had to be a reason, another reason. Perhaps like Sarah in Genesis or Hannah in 1 Samuel, she remained barren because God had a greater plan for her. Her barren state would heighten the sense of her coming pregnancy was going to be a miracle. As we read on in Luke, we know the angel approaches Zechariah with a promise that Elizabeth would have a child, John, We see that in, I'm going to go back to Luke. Luke 1, verse 13. I'll pick it up there. But the angel said unto him, Fear not, Zacharias, for the prayer is heard, and thy wife Elizabeth shall bear thee a son. And thou shalt call his name John, and thou shalt have joy and gladness, and many shall rejoice in his birth, for he shall be great in the sight of the Lord. Look what happens in verse 24. And after those days his wife Elizabeth conceived, and hid herself 5 months, saying, Thus the Lord dealt with me in the days wherein he looked on me to take away my reproach among men. As promised, Elizabeth conceived. And she proclaimed the Lord, took away the disgrace. I didn't see any doubt or unfaithfulness in her at all. She remained faithful and believed God would take care of her, and he did. For Zacharias, not so much. We know what happened to Zacharias. He doubted God's words, and we know what happened because of his doubt. But look what Elizabeth did for him. Look at verse 57. Elizabeth's full time came that she should be delivered, and she brought forth a son, John. And her neighbors and her cousins heard that the Lord had showed great mercy upon her, and they rejoiced with her. And it came to pass on the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child. And they called him Zacharias, after the name of his father, which that would have been traditional at the time, to carry on the father's name. And his mother had answered and said, No, not so. He shall be called John. And they said to her, There is none of thy kindred that is called it by this name. And they made signs to his father how he would have him called. And asking for a writing table, wrote saying, His name is John. And they marveled all. And his mouth was opened immediately, and his tongue loosed, and he spake and praised God. He praised God. It took a while. He was a deaf mute for a while, but he learned. He had to learn the hard way. Had he followed Elizabeth's example, his experience may have been dramatically different. I think the lesson to us with Elizabeth is patience, faith, and trust. Do God's work, and He'll bless us. Another inspiring mother, or lady, and she's a mother in this case, a lady in the Bible, would be Deborah. Deborah's another fine example for us to learn from. In this case, we see Deborah's an important person at that time. Except for the words in Judges 4 and 5, we really don't hear much more about Deborah in the Bible. How did she become so influential in Israel? Not really sure. I read a lot on that, and there's not a lot on that. Of all the people the nation could consult from judgment in Israel, Deborah appears to be the one they preferred. Let's look at Deborah in Judges chapter 4. In Judges 4, verse 1, And the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. Once again, we see the Israelites in trouble. We see in verse 3, And the children of Israel cried unto the Lord, for he, which was Jabin, and had 900 chariots of iron, and 20 years he mightily oppressed the children of Israel. This is where we meet Deborah for the first time. In verse 4, chapter 4, And Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lebadoth, she judged Israel at that time. Verse 5, And she dwelt under the palm tree of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in Mount Ephraim. And the children of Israel came up to her for judgment. In verse 6, And she sent and called for Barak, the son of Abinoam, out of, bear with me here, Kadesh Naphtali. And she said to him, Have not the Lord God of Israel commanded, saying, Go draw toward Mount Tabor, and take with thee 10,000 men of the children of Naphtali, and the children of Zebulun? So here's Deborah, a woman at the time, and she sends for Barak, what surely must have been a testimony to her status in the nation. He comes. He wants to believe the Lord is a message for him, but his faith is not that strong. He wants Deborah at the battle too. Then, only then, he'll go to war. She has such a standing in Israel that her presence makes all the difference to him. What I think is interesting to look at is what she said in verse 6. If you go back and look at verse 6, she tells him, Hath not the Lord of Israel commanded? So he knew what God had asked of him. Yet where was his faith? Where was his trust in God? If you look at verse 8, And Barak said unto her, If thou wilt go with me, then I'll go. But if thou wilt not go with me, then I will not go. So now in verse 9 we see the true faith, the belief that Deborah possesses. If you look at her reply in verse 9, she says, I'll surely go with thee. Notwithstanding the journey that thou takest shall not be for thine honor, but for the Lord shall Sisera into the hand of a woman. And Deborah rose and went with Barak into Kadesh. Deborah's position in Israel is even more impressive when we consider how patriarchal Israel was under the law at that time. Those who served the tabernacle were all male. The kings were male in Israel. Jewish men had the right to divorce a wife in whom they found no favor. The wives seemed to have no similar right. A woman's place was supposed to be in the home, raising the children. And here we see Deborah saying, Okay, honey, I'll go with you. But don't you forget, it's not our glory, but God's glory that we're after. I wonder how true that is in today's world in my life. As we all know how the story turns out. In verse 15, the Lord discomfited Sisera and all his chariots and all his hosts with the edge of the sword before Barak. So I think he has to give a large portion of that credit in that battle to Deborah. God did his part as he said he would do. And then we read the demise of Sisera in verse 21. Then Jael, Heber's wife, took a nail of the tent, took a hammer in her hand, and went softly unto him, and smote the nail into his temple, and fastened it to the ground. For he was fast asleep and weary, so he died. I would tend to think that he knew that it was going to be at the hand of a woman. I think certainly he thought it was going to be Deborah. Obviously it wasn't, but it was still true. Now, I don't know about you other men today, but I can certainly relate to this situation. I can't tell you the number of the times I walked in Barak's shoes. My Deborah, which is sitting back there, is typically the wise one, maintains a faith and trust in God, supports me, kicks me, pokes me, nudges me along. I think another good example of faith, a woman of faith and trusting God, comes through a woman we don't even know her name. Noah's wife. Everybody calls her Noah's wife. The Bible doesn't tell us much about her, but think about it for a minute. Noah's wife must have had a strong faith in God. Because as much as you women care for us, as much as you support us, if we came to you and told us that we had to spend years building a huge boat and load it with thousands of animals, which we were going to live for a year, you'd probably be a little more than skeptical. I think such a request would even test the most faith-filled among us. Perhaps her strong faith was simply a result of years of service, serving God. Perhaps she'd seen Him provide for the family, and she had grown to know and trust that God would provide for their family in the future. Certainly a very, very strong showing of faith and trust. How can we develop such faith? It comes by spending time with God. We take the time to listen to Him and study His words. Become more familiar with that little small voice that speaks to us. The closer we get to God, the more we see His plan. We can trust Him. We can learn. We can put our trust in Him. As we obey Him, the smaller tasks He gives us becomes easier and easier to obey Him. When He calls us to do something that seems beyond our capabilities, faith and trust. With today being Mother's Day, I assume we're all going to do something special for our ladies, our mothers, our wives. Take a moment, stop, let them know how important they are to us. Make sure they know how much we love and we appreciate their efforts and their position. In all fairness, that's what Christ commands us to do every day. Today may be a Hallmark day or an Anna Jarvis who put it on the calendar, but it was Christ who teaches us and showed us how to love one another. Ephesians 5 and 25 tells us, everybody knows this one, husbands, love your wives, even if Christ also loved the church and gave Himself for it. So for today, that's huge. Huge for us. Remember today, remember tomorrow, remember next week. As some of you know, I lost my mom about a year and a half ago. This will be the second Mother's Day that I haven't had her. It was quite rough for me last year compared to this year. I think in due to large parts because of you women right here in the collegiate today. Not to say you replaced my mother. However, I do have a special bond with a large number of you. Various things we do, things to fill that gap. It certainly helped me. The time we spend in service to the Ecclesia, like the VBS, upcoming VBS, or the Sunday school program, become very important to me. So as I conclude today, I want to say thanks to you women, ladies, mothers, grandmothers. You're important to me, and you're a very, very, very important part of this Ecclesia. Thank you.